This is Nachyomi, Sefer Shmuel Bet, Chapter 7. David's kingdom has been consolidated and achieved a considerable level of stability. Reflecting upon this development, David comments to Natan HaNavi, the prophet Natan, that it's inappropriate for him to be sitting in a majestic palace of cedar wood, while the Ark of Hashem resides in a mere tent. Understanding that David intends to build a permanent structure to house the Ark, Natan initially advises David to do as he wishes. However, that night, Natan receives a lengthy prophecy from Hashem, in which he is told that David is not supposed to build a permanent sanctuary for God. In the lengthy divine message that Natan receives, Hashem refers back to the long march of Jewish history that began with the Exodus from Egypt, all the way through the period of the Judges, and that finally culminated in the selection and establishment of David's monarchy. At no time thus far has Hashem indicated a desire for any kind of Beit HaMikdash or Holy Temple to be constructed. Indeed, David's son and successor on the throne will be charged with the task of constructing the Beit HaMikdash, but David himself has not been chosen for this project. First, Hashem will build a house, that is a dynasty, for David by providing him with an heir. Only then will the temple be built. The chapter concludes with David approaching Hashem seemingly in the presence of the Ark and offering a long prayer, expressing his wonderment and gratitude at the manifold blessings with which he has been favored. Not only has David been elevated from obscurity to a position of tremendous prominence, but he has been promised that his monarchy will endure through his descendants forever. David places his own career in the context of Hashem's providence for his people, the unique one and only God's relationship with a unique nation that sanctifies and declares his oneness on earth. And David prays that Hashem's promises to him should indeed be fulfilled. There are a couple of points to highlight in this chapter. There are really many details. There's a lot of beauty to the passages here, to the prayers, to the prophecy. But just to point out a couple of interesting items for your consideration, David's plan to build the Beit HaMikdash is undoubtedly rooted in the Torah's statement that once the Jewish people have achieved security and stability in their new home, a single exclusive and permanent location would be selected for the temple. A temporary mobile sanctuary is representative of a relationship with the divine presence that is also tentative and conditional. A full-fledged temple edifice would symbolize that the Jewish people's relationship with Hashem had advanced to the next level. It was now secure and unshakable. This transition from temporary to permanent was destined to be made at some point, but only after the political circumstances of Israel lent themselves to that. Once the infrastructure had reached a level of maturity and dependability that allowed Hashem's presence to reside among the Jewish people in an uninterrupted manner. But maybe not yet. David legitimately assumed that the mandate of facilitating this transition fell upon his shoulders, and he was enthusiastic about fulfilling the task because of his abiding sense that his political power was a tool in the service of God and in the sanctification of God's name. David was not alone in his assumption. Natan, the prophet, apparently shared the view as a matter of course when he first heard David's suggestion that the time had arrived for the temple to be built. That was an understanding they both shared. They both saw or felt that they saw that the time had come for this leap to be taken. But Natan was quickly corrected by Hashem. David's role would not be to extend the temple, but would be limited to the establishment of the monarchy on a secure foundation. David had already been through many ups and downs in his life, trials and tribulations, problems, to reach this point in his own development. And even more groundwork remained to be laid before it would be clear that the house of David was a force to be reckoned with in the future. After all, Shaul also ruled Israel for a time, but his authority and influence died with him. The proof of the reality of the Davidic dynasty would be its passage from one generation to another, its successful transfer to David's heir. We know that will be Shlomo HaMelech. Once the stability of the regime is made clear, and David's descendant occupies his throne, the construction of the temple will be the first action item on the royal agenda. In Sefer Divrei Yamim, David famously declares that the reason he was forbidden from building a temple was because he had shed a lot of blood during his military career. This would be consistent with the Torah's teaching that metal tools associated with warfare and aggression may not be used in the fashioning of the altar. On the surface, though, this explanation seems to contradict our chapter. Here it sounds like it's the political immaturity of David's kingdom that is the reason he can't build the temple, not his career as a warrior, necessarily. But in reality, David's reference to his military career might have just been another way of conveying the same idea that we see in this chapter. The bottom line is that David's primary struggle and the main focus of his energy and his work was on confronting and destroying the enemies of Israel. His essential task is the establishment of a Jewish government through the dirty work of battling those who stood in its way. This is precisely the message of our chapter. David is the warrior. He's the fighter. He's going to found the dynasty. But he's not the one who comes from a secure, well-established position and can therefore take the next step of building the Beit HaMikdash. The chapter ends with David reiterating the proper Torah view towards his, so to speak, rejection here. He wanted to build the temple and he was rejected. Hashem is the one who assigns us our roles and our mission in life. Our job is to understand what the Almighty expects of us and to devote our energies to the realization of his plan. Had the building of the temple been about David's own ego or glory, he might have been disappointed when he heard that he wouldn't be permitted to do it. However, as a true servant of Hashem, and that's exactly how Hashem refers to him in this entire chapter, as my servant, David responds to the divine message by expressing humble gratitude for his blessings, wholeheartedly embracing his divinely appointed destiny, and committing himself to taking whatever steps are necessary to fulfill it.